Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hey there. Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. We're glad you're with us. Sponsored by 2-Under Apparel. And happy to be sponsored by 2-Under Apparel. It is episode 95 as we head toward our historic 100th episode. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach, Darren Bunch out there in California. And this is clearly an exciting time for both Darren and I here on Talking Golf Getaways. Darren, it's great to be alive. It's great to be a golfer. It's great to be us, basically, I think.
You're in Myrtle Beach, the seaside golfing capital of the world. You didn't even say that this time. It's funny, I was listening to, I think it was Sirius XM radio the other day, and I heard somebody say they were from the seaside golfing capital of the world, and I thought, they stole that from Mitch.
Well, I beg to differ because it's the seaside golf capital of the world. Apparently, there's a lot of people who do not think that golfing is a word. They don't take golfing as an actual thing. And they, if you look on Twitter, there's people that flip out if you say golfing.
Our friend Vic Williams is that way. He doesn't believe golfing is a word.
And yeah.
Whoever it was I heard probably said golf. I just threw golf in there.
Of course, just to rile things up a little bit. We are the seaside golf capital of the world and proud of it. Before we get started on the great episode that we're going to do today, and we're going to talk about a few things that really, really have gotten us excited lately. But one of the things is that for our 100th, I believe it will be an iconic, not just historic, but iconic episode. I'm thinking Library of Congress. I've got a lot of fun thoughts about it, but we're going to have the one person that I think you and I would both agree, and hopefully a lot of other people out there, that has done more for golf and travel in the last, let's say, 5 years than any single person. So we are going to have the great Matty G. Matt Janella is our guest on our 100th episode, and I, for one, am absolutely thrilled.
It will be a Talking Golf Getaways that lives in infamy.
Yeah, great. Yeah, just way to connect it to the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Nice.
Anyway, we've got a lot going on this episode, though, before we get there and teasing other people who are coming up. We've got our Masters shows coming up, and we're going to have Scott Michaud from the Augusta Chronicle is going to be on. That'll be the couple of days before the Masters, and it should be fun to talk with somebody who covers golf right there in the heart of Mastersville.
And there's a lot of people who might not be familiar with Scott, but he is an absolutely fantastic writer. And as you said, he's been covering that, not only that, but a lot of other things, but specifically the Masters for a really long time. And fantastic writer, great insight, and he should be a lot of fun. What we're going to talk about today, and I said you and I were excited, and for good reason. We're going to talk about recent trips to Goat Hill Park out in Oceanside, California, which is just literally a few days old for us. And talking a little bit about Winter Park in Florida outside of Orlando, which I had the pleasure of playing around the PGA show in the end of January, and just basically about what community golf means, because these two courses, more than any other, have created a discussion that is so important in terms of the future of the game. So I think that's going to be great. We're glad you found us. I'm at Mitch Lawrence everywhere on social media. Pick your poison. At Getaways Golf on Twitter and at Golf Getaways on Instagram is where you can find Darren. Anywhere you consume podcasts, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, and always on our great Golf Newsnet platform at golfnewsnet.com. Darren, before we get into that, we're just going to briefly mention this. We couldn't do it without our great listeners and, of course, our fantastic sponsor, which is 2-Under Apparel, all about comfort, all about enjoyment, all about fit. It's a revolutionary design based on athletic performance. It's great for everyday wear as well. Numerous styles and designs, plus personal asset management. Use your imagination. Utilizing 2Under's patented Joey Pouch.
The Joey Pouch saved my life in Nam. That's a little semi-pro reference for those of you who have watched the film Semi-Pro. Anyway, the design and great fabric assures no skin-on-skin contact, no chafing, no heat, and moisture buildup. Also, every pair of 2Under is constructed with high-quality nylon yarn non-roll waistbands. Try saying that a few times.
Good job.
They prevent irritation in the waistband areas, so even with your swing, Mitch, you'll be comfortable.
Touché. But I have to say, this is really, really a unique, fantastic product. I am thrilled with my 2Unders. I've worn them, and Darren, I've told you about this, even though I've kept it kind of quiet. I don't like other people hearing me talk about it, but I've worn them nonstop since I got them. Every condition, I've walked 18 holes. I've walked 27 holes. Everyday wear, they are the bomb. There is no way around it. Golfers William McGirt, David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Matt Every. There's a list of golfers now wearing 2Under. There's Mike Dobbin, who's the Remax Long Drive Tour player. 551-yard drive he's hit, and I guarantee you he was wearing his 2Unders. There's a lineup of incredible athletes in other more demanding sports. So you know if they're wearing them, it's the place to be. Go to 2Under.com. That's the number 2UNDR.com for more info. You can check out the incredible styles. There's so many great designs. And it also includes ridiculously comfortable loungewear. Remember, you can use the promo code GNN20 to get 20% off your order. And you can thank Darren and me later. Trust me, you will.
Will I be able to hit it 551 yards wearing my 2Unders?
You can. It'll take you 4 shots, but you can.
That's generous to say 4 shots. All right. A few other items we are going to update you on before we get started with today's discussion. Our friend Eric Hart, a.k.a. the Mobile Golfer, and I are in talks with our good friends at Visit Scotland to possibly return to golf's homeland in the fall. And I wanted to reach out to the listeners. I'm curious out there what courses our travelers think that we should hit on a trip like this. For the purposes of this trip, we're not going north, so we won't go any farther north than Carnoustie. But if you have ideas in the East Lothian or out in the Turnberry area, we might even get all the way out to Macrahanish. Hit us up on social media with your ideas. One of the places I've been looking at, Mitch, and I know you've been there, is Prestwick, just for the history and the raw, pure golf experience that it is. You know, tell me a little bit about it for a minute.
Well, Prestwick was on my very first trip to Scotland. We had a stop at Prestwick, my friend and I. We didn't have a tea time. We drove up to the pro shop. We talked to one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And he said, look, I know you guys don't have a tea time. We got a little bit of a buildup on the first tee. And he directed us around to, I believe it was the fifth hole, on a back road, and said, park your car there by the gate, go in, tee it up. You won't see the hole because it is, and now I know this to be true, an iconic blind tee shot par 3 over a huge set of mounds. And so we go, we do that. We play Prestwick, which is, I could never describe to you how cool it was. And this was way before I got into the history of the game. It was just someplace we wanted to play. Obviously, the first Open Championship course, there's so much history there, it's stupid. But turned out the guy in the pro shop was head pro Frank Rennie, who I will never forget, an iconic head professional in Scotland who was that nice to my friend Scott and I, who could have said, sorry, you don't have a reservation, come back 2 days from now, but let us sneak out on Prestwick. That was my first experience. I will also tell you, Darren, and I don't know if I've ever told you this, that the other part of that journey to Prestwick included around it a place called Prestwick St. Nicholas, which almost nobody ever talks about. And to me, and this is now, what, 30 years later probably, I still can remember that day. It is in the middle of town. It is one of the most remarkable, bizarre, unique golf courses you'll ever play. Humps, mounds, it's like moon golf in the middle of Scotland. And I just remember it being, I kept walking around going, this is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. So the Prestwick St. Nicholas is the kind of place in terms of an itinerary that you and I and Eric have been talking about that I would love to turn people on to. So Prestwick is, to me, it's a must play.
See, and that's the kind of stories that, those are the kind of stories I'm looking for, that, you know, we, the itinerary that we're kind of working on tentatively, you know, has a lot of old and new kind of tracks for an interesting mix throughout the country. And so we're always looking for those types of places. You and I were talking a little bit before about when we went to the north, you know, who would have thought to go to Tane? And it's one of the signature experiences of that trip. Obviously, Brora, everybody talks about, who we've had on the show, who's been up there. You know, these places that show you that, you know, Scotland golf is not all about the ginormous bucket list courses, even though those are fun and they're out there to be had. And we're going to have some of them on this itinerary, hopefully. But it's the historic courses and the courses that you and I can go play with Hickories now and feel like we're playing back in time. You know, those are the types of things we're looking for. So if you're out there,
think about Fraserburgh.
Sure.
It's the seventh oldest golf course. Nobody ever talks about it. And we had one of the great, great days at Fraserburgh or Newburgh, or there's a ton of those places. I agree with you.
You just want to keep saying Burrow.
Burrow.
So anyway, if you're out there in podcasting land and you're listening to us and you have ideas or places you've been to or places you've read about that you think we ought to consider, hit me with them. And we will do our best to see as many places as we can in the fall when we play some golf, hopefully in Scotland once again.
All right, cool. Before we jump into community golf, both of us want to give a shout out to our, this guy is unbelievable, our buddy tripping friend, Peter Flanagan. You can find him at Regripped on social media. And one of the more, I'm so glad I got to spend some time with him on this trip we just had out to Goat Hill Park. I'd been in touch with him on social media. I'd read a lot of his stuff. He has a great blog on his website. He's a lawyer at Paramount and as much in love with golf as anybody I've ever been around. And we got a chance to play with him. And Darren, I know it wasn't just spending time with him, getting to play Goat Hill Park, but the gift that he brought the two of us is the gift that keeps on giving. I know for a fact because I'm drinking some of it right now.
Well, he brings gifts all the time. I hooked up with him in Wisconsin last summer to play Lasonia and Sand Valley, and he brought us some Journeyman, which we had talked about on the show many a time, obviously, and had Bill Welter, who is the owner and proprietor of Journeyman Whiskey, the Journeyman Distillery, on the show. So he showed up with some Journeyman for us there, and then the other day at Goat Hill, he shows up with our much sought after Sortilage liqueur made with Canadian maple whiskey that we got turned on to last year in New Brunswick by the great people at the Algonquin up there. And just unforgettable. So I know you are partaking of the Sortilage as we record. As
That's
well, you
true.
Should. Yeah.
That's true. It's 2 o'clock here in the East and it's only 11 there. So it's a little early for you, but I'm having some for both of us.
Hopefully I'm going to be on some more trips with him. I don't know what he does to top it.
Well, what's great too is that he had on each of our bottles a post-it note. And on mine it said, the man with all the questions. And on yours it said, the man with all the answers, which is, of course, what we say in our intro. So you know that Peter is on top of things.
Definitely. He is one of the good ones.
All right, let's get into community golf. Let's start with... we'll start with Winter Park because I got to play it earlier. As I said, at the end of January when I went down to the PGA show, our great friend Akbar at Seamus Golf had an outing at Winter Park. And I made special effort to really get down there. I'd heard such great things about it from Machinella, from different people. And Akbar put on a little event the day before the show. So I made it over there. As much as I was kind of prepared to like it, I was unprepared for how completely blown away by the experience of a 9-hole golf course in the middle of a community, just totally took me by surprise and makes me yearn for it. It makes me angry in a way that there isn't that here in Myrtle Beach where I live and in more places around the country. Darren, I know you and I have both read Michael Bamberger's piece on golf.com about Winter Park. If you haven't, if you're listening to this and you haven't had a chance to read it, it's a great piece. There's a lot of wonderful stuff been written about Winter Park. That's one of the best. But it's an incredible experience, Darren. And I know you've gotten to play short courses and community courses, but there was something about Winter Park that just, as I said, took me by surprise and will stay with me forever, really.
Well, it's funny because not long ago, I threw out a random thing on Twitter one day where I was wishing that here in Bakersfield, California, the golf capital of nowhere, that we had something like a 9-hole or a 12-hole golf course that I could go out and play for, you know, two and a half hours, get away from the office, go play. And I think too often people think when you say short course, they think all par threes. And so what I was interested about with Winter Park is the makeup of it. You know, tell me a little bit about the holes and the makeup and what made it, besides being just a great walk, you know, what made it an interesting golf course for you?
Well, it was, first of all, it's the whole, you start with the entirety of the approach experience, which is Winter Park is, as I said, outside of Orlando. It's a very affluent community. And when you have directions and you drive into it, the road that I came in on and that you come into contact with later as you're walking the course, there's a huge cemetery, a town cemetery. So I'm driving in, trying to find the entrance to the golf course. And I'm looking on the left and I see this amazing, it's beautiful, but a really big cemetery. And I thought, wow, this is cool. And I kept driving and I turn in and I finally find the parking lot there, which is small. I get out of the car. Everything about that part of it is small. It's a small pro shop. It's a small putting green. It's a very intimate setting. And I knew a little bit about it because I'd heard a fair amount and I'd done some research. But I kept thinking to myself, what's amazing about this is from the minute you step out of your car, you feel a community, literally. You feel like you've stepped into some place where people are just there for the experience of golf, of camaraderie, of fun. There's no huge, you know, there's no regulations. There's no, well, you better be wearing a collared shirt. Well, you better, all the things that sometimes really get me angry when people talk about growing the game is absent at Winter Park. So before you even step on the golf course, you have a great and different feeling. Once you do get to play, and they often send out fivesomes or sixsomes, depending on the flow and the traffic and how many people are playing. But people in flip-flops, people in jeans, people, it's a real, well, let's just go play for an hour and 15 minutes. And when you tee off, we had a fantastic group. Our good friend Ryan from iGolf Reviews was in my group. We had just a variety of people. It's basically flat land, and it's Florida. It's basically flat land that Keith Reb, who's a fantastic designer, part of the Core Crenshaw team, Riley Johns, who's from Integrative Golf, two young guys who really get it. And they came in. I could go into a longer story about the lead up to them redesigning Winter Park, but I'll let our listeners go and do some research because it has a ridiculous history. I mean, 100-year-old history, and the course has gone through everything from being a 9-hole country club to an 18-hole to a 27-hole to sheep grazing in a pasture during the war to coming back to almost being gone to, I mean, the story is amazing. It's got a fantastic history. But they finally settled on Keith Reb and Riley Johns. And these two guys came in and took this flat piece of land, and essentially it's flat. It's not like there's elevation. But what they did is they left the fairway areas so that it's fun and pretty wide open. They added a couple of fairway bunkers on different holes to make it interesting, visually, but the green complexes are what it's all about. And that made total sense to me because they didn't have to do a ton of earth moving or anything else. But the green complexes are pretty much as good as you'd find on any great golf course. There are bunkers that are beautiful, not ridiculous, just enough to really make you challenged. And the greens themselves, in terms of, I mean, it was in great shape, but the greens themselves have contouring and slope and different things where they're a challenge. They really are a challenge. And it's got such a combination to me of everything that you love about the game. And as you said at the beginning, it's not a par three course. There's a 490-yard par five on the course. There's holes you can drive. There's great par threes. And in nine holes, you can, if you wanted to, you can pretty much use every club in the bag. You can go out and play it with three clubs if you want. But our Ryan, I played it with Ryan Ballingy, our partner here at Golf News Net. And Ryan is a bomber. I mean, a bomber.
To say the least.
He just flat out kills it. So for him, on every hole, my strategy with Hickory's, you know me, the strategy was hit it and then hit it again, period. But Ryan really had to think about, did he want to hit a short iron off the tee and have this distance? Did he want to hit a long iron, get close to the green? On the par five, you know, he hit his tee shot and then he had 260 into the green. And he had to really make a decision. So he wound up hitting three wood and killed it and hit it over the green into trouble. So it's not like you just go out there and go, isn't this a cute little golf course? It is. It has everything that you could possibly want. And the combination of that and the setting, the cemetery comes into play if you're wayward. There's railroad tracks at the back end that run right behind the green. You come back in. The setting at the clubhouse, the community of people sitting around and talking, it was, as I said, mind-boggling to me. It was a real, real eye-opener because you and I have had the experience of golf in a community in Scotland and Ireland where the course is in the center of the town and it's a centerpiece. And this is truly a centerpiece for Winter Park.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen social media video, you know, of live music being played outside the clubhouse and just people milling around. And, you know, it's the same mentality as what we found at Goat Hill Park down in Oceanside. And so, you know, Oceanside, California is just north of San Diego, kind of between San Diego and Orange County. And we decided we would go down there. We've heard tons about it. It's been one of Matt Janella's, causes that he has championed, and people absolutely love it. And it's a course that was brought back from the dead. I mean, it was ready to be on the trash heap. And, you know, John Ashworth got involved and other people, and they really just started working on it. And you can see what has been done there. But the first thing that strikes you when you get there is this community feel up around the little tiny clubhouse. People on the driving range, people putting, people with dogs. It's just when we were there on a Sunday afternoon, it's just a gathering place of people.
And what I, you know, that part of it, the initial part, it's like I said, at Winter Park, when you first get there, you get it. There's no way around it. This is not a stuffy place. This is a place where people come during their day and especially on the weekend to really hang out and have fun. I mean, how many dogs did we see? Forget Ragsy, your beautiful pup, who you brought. But how many dogs, big and small, did we see around that area when we first got there?
Yeah, there were dogs, big and small, too. I mean, a guy walked by with a Great Dane, you know, which freaked Ragsy out since he's all of about 13 pounds.
Yeah, but I love that spirit of the people who were there. Everybody's smiling. Everybody's hello, nod of the head. Just kind of the whole atmosphere as it's there. And it's a very loose thing. People lined up at the inside the clubhouse to go pay. And I forgot to mention this too about Winter Park, but Goat Hill is the same way. The rates are a joke. I mean, the rates are a joke. They are what golf should be if you want to talk about getting people involved. $16, $18. Goat Hill Park was $25. I think I got it for $22 because they felt sorry for me. Right, Darren?
That's right. They felt sorry for your age.
Yeah, they did. They did. But I mean that, you know, especially at Goat Hill, it's 18 holes. You know, you throw down $25 to go play. It's just that part of it too. And talk a little bit about what the interesting design of Goat Hill Park and what that challenge was like.
Well, the piece of property lives up to the name. I mean, it is like a billy goat track in a way, where you're going up and down and up and down and up and down. It's in probably a spot that you would never expect to see a golf course. And I have driven up and down Interstate 5 for decades, literally, and I never realized those golf holes were right there until we got there and we played it. There are a couple tee boxes where you stand and you just look over Interstate 5, you know, one of the busiest freeways in the world. And so it's that part of it is interesting. And a lot of par threes, some par fours, and one par five, which, you know, every hole has a name. And the fact that the par five is called the par five made me laugh when I saw it. It's little details like that. The tee markers there are very cool design anyway. A lot of the par threes are kind of plateau par threes, but this is another golf course where it comes down to the greens. And I don't think they're not nearly as big as I imagine they are at Winter Park. But one of the things they've done is they've brought this course back to life. Is the greens were in phenomenal condition when we were there. You know, they were extremely puttable, really great condition, and they are hard and interesting and quirky to putt. There are ridges you don't expect, and there's speed on some of them. Our boy Pete there had a birdie putt, had a couple of birdie putts on the day, but he had one on 17 that he easily could have run by, you know, 50 feet if he hit it a little bit too strong. It's a fun golf course to putt if you embrace the idea of fun putting. And so there's so many little details out there because it's such an odd, quirky track. There was a par four that has a blind tee shot, but when you get up over this little ridge, you realize that all the balls funnel down into this almost bathtub-like fairway. And so it's a fun, quirky golf course, and I can't wait to go back and try to play it. Now when I'm heading to San Diego, I'll stop in and play it almost every time. I may not play it on a Sunday afternoon. It was a little bit busy. If there's a knock on Goat Hill, it's that it can get a little bit slow. We played behind a 6-some the day we played. And, you know, the round took us well over 5 hours to play only a 4,400-yard golf course. But I hear other people who go out there during the week and it's you know, moves along and it's great. So, you know, it's got its pluses and its minuses. But for the price and for the experience and for everything you get, and for just the golf shots that you get to hit out there, the creative golf shots, it's a blast. And I totally understood after going around it once why Janela is such a champion of what they've done there.
Yeah, and he is, as so many people are, he's a champion of both Goat Hill and Winter Park. He's a member at Winter Park. He lives right by there working at the Golf Channel, so he's there all the time. And I just realized as you were talking about the greens, and I was talking about the greens at Winter Park before, one of the great things, you and I and Peter played with two very beginner golfers, shall we say,
yes.
A guy and a woman. Their attitude about playing golf was very different than your attitude, mine, and Peter's. What I'm saying is they were just enjoying the being out there playing golf and hitting some shots. So they had fun. But if you're a golfer that has played, appreciates architecture and appreciates kind of green design, and these two courses for us hold fascination. I mean, Winter Park, there were probably two or three greens on that 9-hole course that may have had 15, 20 pin placements. And when you stood there and looked at them, you realized that depending on where you were playing that shot to, every shot into a different pin is a different challenge. And on a 9-hole little public track like that, that's a major accomplishment. So I think both of them, they offer something for true beginners, for golfers that are experienced veteran players who want not just fun, but a little bit of a challenge. Both Goat Hill and Winter Park have it in spades. So I'm hoping, I put something up on social media that I said, I hope this is the future of golf.
Yeah. And I think too, when you're playing these golf courses, you know, and you and I champion fun all the time. And just because a golf course might be hard in terms of scoring does not mean that that golf course is not fun. You know, we talk about that all the time with Tobacco Road. People think it's hard to score at Tobacco Road, but that doesn't make the golf course any less fun. And that's what I found at Goat Hill. I hate losing golf balls, and I would have to hit it pretty bad to lose golf balls at Goat Hill. But scoring is a whole nother deal, because you've got to be able to putt the golf ball. You've got to be able to hit some interesting, cool shots. It is a little bit tight. So, you know, there is that kind of fine line in terms of, you know, I hit a ball just right of the number two par three, which is just by the tee box for 17. And we never found it. I don't know if someone walked off with it. I don't know if it almost hit somebody that we didn't see behind a tree. I don't know what happened. But, you know, it's quirky in that regard. And you've got to pay attention and, you know, be on top of what you're doing when you hit it. But the fact that we saw so many beginners out there just slapping it around, having a good time, you know, maybe taking 10 or 12 shots to get to the green sometimes, and having a good time putting, it's heartwarming in a way. It's different than when we go to, you know, the hardcore tracks where, you know, only the better half of players are trying to go play. This is just built to have fun, and some people will score better and some people will just be out there for the swing of it. And that's I think what it's all about. And the fact that we took Ragsy with us for 18 holes was even better, you know, just walking along with the dog and having a good time. And again, another example of why it's so utterly ridiculous that I can't take my dogs for a walk with me on the golf course when I play in the late afternoons here in Bakersfield.
Yeah, and in Myrtle Beach, you can't take them ever. So
You can't even walk in Myrtle Beach.
You can't walk here, and you can't take dogs. And so they're lucky I'm still here. Let's put it that way. I might just have to move to Oceanside. That's all I could say.
There are worse places to be.
No, trust me, I know. I drove down from L.A., and, you know, you drive out of L.A., you go through all the hassle of the freeway and traffic and everything else, and about three-quarters of the way down, when you hit the stretch of I-5, where the Pacific just comes up on your right, and you see the ocean, and it kind of mellows out, and it was like a huge relief and a breath, and then all of a sudden you're at Goat Hill. It's fantastic. Really great. All right. We've talked about Winter Park. We've talked about Goat Hill. We could talk about it for hours. Do some research. If you're anywhere near either of them, they're definitely worth it. Go play them. Darren, this has been great. I know we'll talk a lot more about kind of community golf stuff in the future. But for now, if you're listening, follow us, as hopefully you do. Reach out to chat, social media, at Mitch Lawrence, LauranceE, and at Getaways Golf on Twitter. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. That'll help us spread the word about the best in golf travel. And Darren, this is pretty amazing given where we were just a short time ago. 5 more episodes to number 100.
Absolutely amazing.
So pay attention, follow along, join in as we get to that magic number. And whatever you do, keep on running down the dream. So long.